starting. All right, we are going to reconvene the Transportation Public Safety Committee meeting of March 6, 2013, and our quorum holds from our recess earlier. And we're going to be taking Senate File 583 and Senate File 664 together. Those are the same subject. So what the heck? We might as well be efficient. And someone's going to retrieve Senator Carlson now from Education. We're going to have a lot of members popping in and out because we've got a lot of meetings going on around the building. Senator Peterson, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today we have Senate File 583. Before you that relates specifically to some tools that we hope to give greater Minnesota counties in order to meet some of the transportation needs that they have, that we have out in greater Minnesota. I have a couple folks that are going to come up in a few minutes to speak in favor of the bill. I just had a correction on the agenda. We have Commissioner Jeff Mergen from Stearns County, and then the county engineer Jody Tyke, but she will not be testifying unless we have specific questions for her. But the correction is that they're from Stearns County, which happens to be the largest milk-producing county in the state. If you drink milk, you might appreciate that. Also, home of many great quarries in the granite industry as well. But the bill we have for you today really is about giving local control back to county boards in order to allow them to fund roads in the manner that they see fit. What this bill does, it would allow greater Minnesota counties to do right now what metro counties do, which is charge a wheelage fee, so to speak, or tax that would be allowed to go up to $20. It is not something that's going to happen right away. But it gives the county boards the authorities to go up to that level before this bill would have to be reviewed again by the legislature. With that, I'll ask the folks that are interested in speaking in favor of the bill to come on up.
All right. All right, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and then begin.
I'm Paul Krause, Dakota County Commissioner.
Jeff Mergen, Stearns County Commissioner.
Great. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Whoever would like to start,
it's up to you. I can start. Good evening. I'm chairman of the Stearns County Board of Commissioners. As a commissioner, I hear many opinions on government spending. The one area where people would like to see more funding is roads. Unfortunately, greater Minnesota counties have fewer funding options than the metro area. The metro area benefits from greater financial matches, a higher percentage of federal dollars, and the option of the wheelage tax. Extending the option of the wheelage tax to outstate counties will give greater Minnesota counties the ability to assess a user fee to directly address road improvement needs. This, along with the ability to levy the local option sales tax without a referendum, is an authority that is already given to the metro counties. For some counties, especially those with a large seasonal recreation traffic, the local option sales tax might be a better fit than the wheelage tax. I acknowledge that not every county may be able to benefit greatly from the wheelage fee or the sales tax due to a lower population base, but that calculation should be left to county boards to determine. As an example, Stearns County has 970 miles of road to maintain. A $5 wheelage tax would generate $750,000. A $20 wheelage tax would generate $3 million. The decision of whether or not to assess a wheelage tax and how much to assess should be left to the Stearns County Board. If a wheelage tax were assessed, county residents would be able to see exactly where the dollars they contribute are going, and I am held accountable by my constituents for the decisions that I make at that local level. And with revenue sources for roads falling behind, greater Minnesota counties should have more control over local funding options like the metro counterparts already do. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Paul Krause from Dakota County. Why it is important to pass the County Transportation Governance Bill, the counties have the authority to establish the wheelage tax up to $20 per vehicle and expanding the authority to all 87 counties. This is about a local tax to meet local needs. Raising the cap gives the counties the flexibility to access and meet their own transportation needs, which basically is highways and bridges in their own county. Nobody wants to be taxed. We know that. So why do we want this to pass? Dakota County is a county of a little over 400,000 people now. Our transportation system is essentially the economy and the quality of life in Dakota County. It connects the people, natural resources, and businesses to each other. It's key to getting the goods to the market, and our transportation system is growing very, very old very, very quickly. We have 400,000 people. We think in the next 20 to 30 years we'll add another 100,000 people. And by 2030, all of our roads will be over capacity or very close to capacity. And with these the wheelage taxes that we're using right now, we receive about $1.5 million to $1.7 million every year, and those go directly to the county roads and the bridges. We're one of five in the metropolitan area that uses the wheelage tax. And we are it's set at $5 right now. Hennepin and Ramsey do not use it. through 2030, it's estimated that we will need $1.2 to $1.3 billion a year. And with currently anticipated revenue of the $5 wheelage tax limit, we will fall over $600 million short by 2030. I don't like raising taxes any more than the next elected official, including you people. But I don't want to raise property taxes to pay for something that should be funded that should not be funded by our homeowners. We feel that we're asking that if you give us the authority to impose a reasonable user fee, and if you don't own a vehicle and don't drive on the roads, you don't pay that tax. To me, it just makes sense. I've been a county commissioner for 19 years right now, and I can say that since 2007, I have not had anybody in our county talk against the wheelage tax. And somebody else might have, but me personally, nobody has talked against the wheelage tax to me. Dakota's enacted the $5 wheelage tax in 2005, and our residents were okay with it. What made it acceptable to the taxpayer was it was for the local roads, it was for the local bridges, it was a transparent tax to the residents, it's a user fee. If they're going to drive on our roads, they pay the tax. The money all stayed in our county, and it was an alternative to the increased property tax. While we are strong proponents of this bill, others are not. And, for example, the trucking industry has suggested that they be exempted. And it's a primary concern about being put at a competitive disadvantage in all Minnesota counties if the wheelage tax is encountered. It just doesn't make sense that exemptions should be made. The wheelage tax is intended as a user fee. Trucks use the roads just like any other vehicles, and basically they tear it up more than any other vehicle. In fact, the weight of trucks means they wear out the roads much faster than all the other vehicles. A $5 wheelage fee tax was enacted in Dakota County 7 years ago. The trucking industry in the county has remained robust. And those counties that are neighboring to us, which is Hennepin and Ramsey, we don't even feel the results of that $5 wheelage tax. Like I said, the trucking industry in Dakota County is still robust, and we have not had any problems with the truckers in Dakota County and with those competing in the trucking business from Hennepin or Ramsey. This legislation is very important to us, keeping our county roads across the state safe and efficient, and I'm asking you folks for your support. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Commissioner Krause. Any questions for Commissioner Krause? Senator Carlson, we'll give you an opportunity to make your comments to your bill.
Well, I haven't. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I haven't been here for the introduction of Senator Peterson's version of the same thing, but my bill is Senate File 664, and it does everything exactly the same, except it does not go to the other sections that Senator Peterson is introducing. But I would say that I would echo all of the things that Commissioner Krause is saying, and I have been in Dakota County my entire life, and of course, we get a lot of input from constituents, whether it's county or state, and I have not heard any one person complain about the wheelage tax either.
All right. Thank you. Senator Osmond.
To the authors, thank you, Mr. Chair. To the authors, I just want to clarify this because we're sort of playing dueling banjos here. On both of the bills, is a referendum currently required on wheelage taxes under the metropolitan counties that are currently existing under this law?
Mr. Chair and Senator Osmick, no, it's not.
Okay. So it's imposed by the board that chooses to do by a majority vote. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Senator Osmick and senators, you know, it's important to note that, you know, these county boards do not make these decisions on their own. They have a public hearing process, and the community does get a chance to weigh in through the normal hearing process that the county board goes through for any other decision-making process they make that require the public notice in those hearings. So there absolutely will be an opportunity for the community to have input as they choose to debate this issue on a local level.
So, Mr. Chair,
Senator Osmond.
So then to Senator Carlson, I see that you have an additional section that talks about stripping out, as I'm trying to find the difference between the two of you so I know what we're dealing with. You have one section you're adding an additional strip out on. Is that what I'm reading here? It's in section 2 on page 3. Can you speak to that? Yep. It says it's lines 314 through 16.
Yep. Madam Chair and Senator Osmick, 583 is my bill.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yep, and so the are you talking about I'm sorry, can I have you repeat the line numbers again?
It's page number 3. Lines 314 through 16 talks about you're doing a delete.
Yes, that's the referendum, the last line and a half there that you referenced on lines 3.14 and 3.16.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, and to Senator Peterson, so then this is currently in statute?
Not for... No, my understanding that it's not for the metro counties, and this bill would just make it the same for the greater Minnesota counties.
Senator Peterson?
Yep, go ahead.
Council would be able to clarify
if
that would help.
Madam Chair and Senator Osmick, the Senate File 583 actually deals with two different taxes. Section 1 is the wheelage tax, and there is no referendum requirement currently for the metropolitan wheelage tax section of law. Section 2 deals with a local sales tax authorization, and this 297A.993 is a section of law that allows local jurisdictions to impose a sales tax for a transportation improvement, and that does have a referendum requirement, which is being removed in this bill.
And Madam Chair, and just to Council, thank you for clarification, because I'm sort of bouncing back and forth between the two of them. So to make it a little easier, so in Senator Peterson's bill, there's a repeal on the referendum on sales tax. In Senator Carlson's bill, that doesn't exist.
Senate Council?
Madam Chair, that is correct. And I just to avoid any misunderstanding, the Section 2 is not a local sales tax for general purposes. This is a specific transportation authorization for local sales tax.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Madam Chair, as long as we're talking about that section, I do have an amendment I should offer as well. It's an A2
okay,
amendment.
Okay, Senator Peterson has an amendment.
Yep.
Do we have the amendment?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can see, members, as that amendment's being handed out, you can see this amendment is inserted right at the very end of the bill in line 17. And what this amendment does is it prevents an issue raised by one of the counties that I represent in terms of this issue. And what it does, it would allow prevent from happening that currently the county board can use that money for any transportation-related projects, and I have a county that right now that is paying for some transportation products or projects from their property tax. And so in this case, moving forward, it would prevent that same thing from happening to other greater Minnesota counties, and it allows them to use this potential tool for obligations that are already in place, providing property tax relief for the members of the counties. And this bill and this issue is backed up by three resolutions, or really four resolutions that are in your packet there from Stearns and Benton and Sherburne counties, or the counties I serve. They're backed up with those resolutions from those county boards and the resolutions from the rest of greater Minnesota. Those resolutions are forthcoming. So.
Okay, thank you, Senator Peterson. Members, we have a 2 amendment in front of us. Are there any questions in regards to the amendment? Our discussion, Senator St. John.
Chair and Senator Peterson, and maybe more specifically, Council, and maybe I'm getting into this at the wrong time, but as you talk about line 1.7. And the idea of the wheelage tax, I found out about an hour ago that wheelage tax is constitutionally talked about. And I'm forgetting chapter and verse, but it can only be used for certain things. Maybe you can help. Can it be used for operating cost is a real question.
Council?
Madam Chair and Senator Senjum, the wheelage tax It can only be used for highway purposes. That's constitutionally provided. But this amendment deals with, and it's an amendment to a sales tax, not
okay.
to the wheelage
okay.
tax.
Okay, I'm sorry. Oh, I wasn't
Thank you.
Playing in the right room.
Thank you. Any further discussion or questions on the amendment? Would anyone like to testify on the amendment? Okay, in regards to the motion A2, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No. Motion prevails. Uh-huh. Senator Peterson, further discussion on which bill are we doing?
Madam Chair,
either bill.
Yeah, Madam Chair, it'd be Senate File 583 is my bill, or Senate File 664 is Senator Carlson. I don't have any other comments to add at this point other than to entertain questions, but I believe there's more folks that are interested in speaking to this bill.
Is there more testimony on this bill?
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
See you later.
Yes. Oh, there is. Okay. This one? Abby Bryduck?
Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. She, oh, yeah, Abby's here. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay, then.
Yep. Madam Chair. Oh, Madam Chair, we have John Hauslog and Jacob Milner that both are interested in testifying.
Okay, Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair, and maybe again back to Senate Counsel, and again referring to line point 17 and where it talks, well, a specific transit project, I don't know if that's defined. Well, I guess maybe the first question is, and I should have asked this on the amendment, is that specific to a one project somewhere in Minnesota? Or could that be any project?
Mr. Chair and
Ms. Berzofsky.
And Senator Senjum. In order to impose the sales tax in 297A.993, the county board has to specify a specific project that the proceeds of the tax are going to support. And currently it has to be a transportation project. This amendment would expand that to specify that it can be a specific transit project. By specific, it means it has to be specified in the resolution.
Senator Senator.
And perhaps also back to counsel, within the definition of transit, could high-speed rail, I'll just be right to the point, could Olmsted County's high-speed rail be a application for this tax under the definition of transit?
Mr. Chair and Senator Senjum, I believe so.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Looks like a little change was made in my absence. great. Who's up on deck here? Mr. Hauslodden.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Again, I am John Hauslodden, president of the Minnesota Trucking Association. I'm here today to oppose the wheelage tax in Senate Files 583 and 664. Our concerns are twofold. First, we do believe that the bills create an unlevel playing field for trucking companies based on their physical location and where they register their fleets, and we'll get into that. And second, the system will be burdensome to administer. To the first point, a trucking company with a fleet of 100 trucks located in a county that chooses to levy a $20 wheelage tax would receive a bill of $2,000, while its competitor, one over, may not be levied such a fee. Additionally, national fleets have the opportunity to register their fleets through the International Registration Plan, also known as the IRP, in any state that they have an established place of business. Under this program, a company may garage their trucks in Minnesota but have them registered in Illinois. They will never see a bill for the wheelage tax since their trucks are legally registered elsewhere, but a carrier who base plates their fleet in Minnesota in a wheelage tax county will be charged. This is already a reality for some carriers in the metro area who are paying a few thousand dollars in Dakota County now while their competitors down the road in the same county who are base plating elsewhere are not. And that may be one of the reasons why the Dakota County commissioners are not hearing a lot from the trucking industry, because they're taking advantage of the flexibility to base plate elsewhere. And this is a real trucking issue for trucking companies on borders. If the wheelage tax goes too high for those companies that base plate in Minnesota, they may simply choose to register their trucks across the state line. And as we've heard in other testimony in previous hearings, the Department of Driver and Vehicle Services have said that variable fees by county will be tough for an agency to administer. And this is equally true for trucking companies because they have their fleets garaged throughout the state. The trucking company will have to spend time verifying that they are being charged the right amounts in the right locations, as the current wheelage tax collection system requires payees to reconcile the amounts due themselves. So the Minnesota Trucking Association is supportive of having equitable and adequate funding for our state's road system, and we still believe that our current system of fuel taxes, registration fees, and motor vehicle sales tax is the fairest and most efficient. And just bearing in mind that trucks represent only 8% of the vehicle miles traveled in the state, and yet we pay one-third of all the taxes and fees owed by Minnesota motorists. So in conclusion, we would ask that you continue to rely on the existing mechanisms to fund our state's roads rather than a new fee that will be inequitable in its application and unreliable in its collection. And if it is the will of the committee to move forward with a wheelage tax, we would ask you to exempt commercial motor vehicles over 26,000 pounds so as to maintain a level playing field for the industry in Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Hausladen. I appreciate your point about the 8% vehicle miles traveled as compared to the level of taxes you pay, but also bear in mind that one truck has a disparate impact to a single car. So, you know, there is some equity built into that calculation. We disagree on how much equity is built into that, but one truck inarguably creates more wear and tear on the road than a car. Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Mr. Hausladen, I want to explore what you just said about plating. That let's say that County A and County B are next to each other, and County A has this wheelage tax, County B does not. So what you're saying is they can plate in County B, completely avoid, even though they actually have their operation in County A, they can plate in County B, completely avoid the wheelage tax. And is there not a benefit for County B? Because by just simply registering in that county, they probably capture some level of additional revenue just because they're plating in a different jurisdiction. Is that accurate at all?
Mr. Chairman, no. It would be base plating in other states, not other counties.
Okay.
It's a function of where they would garage it, but not where they would base plate it.
Okay. Thank you.
So we need a little clarity on this question because I think there's a little confusion about where trucks reside versus where they're registered and whether or not they pay the wheelage tax. And so Ms. Berezovsky is going to help us sort that out because I think there's confusion in some previous discussion in another part of this institution that shall remain nameless. And so, Ms. Berezovsky, can you help us understand what 163.051 provides for in terms of where a truck resides versus where it's registered and whether or not it's subject to the wheelage tax?
Mr. Chair, there is a twofold test for a motor vehicle to determine whether it has to pay a tax in a county that has imposed a wheelage tax. The first is what county is it kept in when it's not in operation? And the other is, does it pay registration taxes under Chapter 168, Minnesota Vehicle Registration Taxes?
So, members, if you look at lines 1.11 and 1.12 of existing language, each motor vehicle that is kept in such county when not in operation and that is subject to annual registration and taxation under Chapter 168. So, does that clarify? All right. Mr. Milner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jacob Milner, and I'm representing the Minnesota Auto Dealer Association, and I'm here to express our concerns on these two bills, Senate File 583 and Senate File 664. First, we encourage you to reject new taxes on our customers. Minnesota drivers are already currently paying significantly more in taxes and fees than drivers in our surrounding states. Expanding and increasing this fee would add to the tax burden of every Minnesotan who is currently driving a vehicle. Secondly, these bills would be exceedingly difficult for Minnesota's dealerships to administer should this proposal become law in its current form. Currently, the wheelage tax, which is set at $5, is applied in only 5 metro counties. This bill, however, would increase the fee to up to $20 and expand the taxing authority to all 87 counties. By allowing the fee to be increased to up to $20 conceivably means that all 87 Minnesota counties could impose a different fee amount, allowing a variety of fees on motor vehicles at the local government level would make registration of our customers' vehicles extremely difficult, since some dealerships regularly sell vehicles to customers from a variety of Minnesota counties. For instance, in order for a dealer in Ramsey County to sell a vehicle to a customer who keeps his car in Pine County, the Ramsey County dealership would need to know the proper rate of the Pine County wheelage tax, or if Pine County imposes a wheelage tax on its citizens at all. Adding an additional layer of local government taxing authority with 87 potential varying fees would only add to Minnesota's already complicated motor vehicle taxation policies. In conclusion, we encourage you to reconsider this, how this proposal is crafted, if you decide to move this proposal through the legislature. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Milner. Questions? Committee.
Mr. Chair, could I respond?
Senator
Pierce. If I could have a moment to respond to a couple of questions that were raised. You know, I operate about 25 highway heavy vehicles myself, and I can assure you that the licensing is not a problem. I produce a check for the tabs that are available, and I send a dispatcher or a fleet manager down to the courthouse, and we pay that tabs and those bills, and they bring the tabs back and put them on the truck. And so the ability for a county to collect an additional wheelage tax or fee, I believe is not going to be a burden for that staff. I think you've heard that today from the county commissioners, and I think it's certainly demonstrated by the resolutions that you have in your information there from the counties I serve. And the bottom line is, I think county commissioners have the ability and are more than capable of deciding whether their county is going to remain competitive through this situation. For example, in Stearns County, it's interesting to note they actually reduced their levy this last year, and so I know that's a fairly rare occurrence, but that's a county board we can trust, members. We have a county board that I serve that actually reduced their levy, and they're simply asking for this as a tool to use to take care of the roads. As you know, our constituents believe roads are something that should be – roads and bridges should be paid for out of one of the core functions of government, and this is going to allow those county boards to do that in a manner that's going to meet their constituents' needs. In relation to the dealership tax, the auto dealerships tax, I understand that issue. Again, that's something I go through every day. I sell concrete block or concrete masonry materials. I collect all different kinds of sales taxes from every different community that I sell block in, and in states, quite frankly. And it is a task that's manageable, and I would encourage you to support this bill as it's written.
All right. Thank you.
What are they drinking in St. Cloud?
All right. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to add my confirmation to Senator Peterson here. And one of the things, we are talking about something that it has been going on in other counties. My county is one of them. And when our county instituted the sales tax, they did do a property tax or a real estate tax reduction. And also on the trucking industry, we really do have to look at the amount of damage that is done by heavy trucks. And I think the figure that we've been using for a long time has been that one laden truck is worth about 1,000 to 1,500 cars. So there's a major difference in the stress that a truck puts onto the streets and roads. So I want to make sure that I'm moving my bill also.
All right. All right. So why don't you make your motion?
And Mr. Chair and members, I move Senate File
580.
Senate File 583 to be recommended to pass.
No. I'm sorry, Senator Carlson. You're Senate File
742.
664.
Mr. Chair, move Senate File 664.
Actually, no, Senator Carlson, we should take Senator Peterson's because we have it's in front of us and it was amended. So why don't we just finish the business on 583?
Okay.
All right, and then we'll take your motion, Senator Osmick.
Mr. Chair, I would move on Senate File 583. I would move the A4 amendment, please.
All right. All right, the A4 is before us, Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This puts in a requirement for a referendum in order to impose the wheelage tax. I appreciate Senator Peterson's efforts and that we believe in local control. I think the most local control of all is at the ballot box. And if the county board believes that this is the right thing to do, then they shouldn't necessarily have a problem having their voters know what the implications are and actually have to vote on imposing it upon themselves.
Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, I would encourage you to defeat this amendment. I have talked with this extensively with the county boards I represent, and I would speak in opposition to this. It's important to note, as I mentioned earlier, the county boards will not do this on their own. They do need to go through a public hearing process. And quite frankly, members, I served on a city council myself, and I can assure you it's much easier to unelect a city council member or a county board member than it is to unelect a state senator or a state representative, and which is the reason why I'm comfortable with the bill as it is, and would encourage you to defeat this amendment.
Thank you. Anything further on the Osmick amendments,
Senator Osmick? Mr. Chair, I'd appreciate a roll call vote on this, please.
Roll call has been requested. A roll call will be granted. Anything further, members? Clerk will take the roll. Chair votes no.
Senator Carlson.
No.
Senator Champion. Senator Franson.
Nope.
Senator Jensen.
No.
Senator Kent.
No.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
What's this?
Senator Miller.
Yes.
Senator Osmick.
Yes.
Senator Peterson.
No.
Senator Pratt.
Yes.
Senator Reinert. Senator Ress. Senator Senjum.
For the amendment, yes.
Senator Tomasoni.
Yes.
Senator Westrum. Senator Wieger.
I need to pass. I just came in and...
On a vote of 5-6, the amendment is not adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Osmick.
Just to be an equal opportunity amender, I'd like to amend Senate File 664 with the A1 amendment, please.
Why don't we dispense with Senate File 583 and we'll put Senate File 664 in front of us.
Fair enough.
All right. Anything further on Senate File 583, members? Senator Peterson, you have a motion.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would move Senate File. I lost my 583 number bill number as amended, and be recommended to pass to the Tax Committee, please.
All right. Any questions on the Peterson motion, Senator Osmond?
Mr. Chair, I'd appreciate a roll call vote, please.
All right. Roll call has been requested. A roll call will be granted. Chair votes yes.
Senator Carlson.
Yes.
Senator Champion. Senator Franson.
Yes.
Senator Jensen.
Yes.
Senator Kent.
Yes.
Senator Kiffmeyer. Senator Miller.
No.
Senator Osmick.
No.
Senator Peterson.
Yes.
Senator Pratt.
No.
Senator Reinert. Senator Ress. Senator Senjum.
Yes.
Senator Tomasoni.
No.
Senator Westrum. Senator Wieger.
Yes.
On a vote of 8-4, the motion is passed. All right, so now we have Senate File 664 in front of us. Senator Osmick has an amendment to Senate File 664. Oh, Senator Osmick, what is your amendment number?
The A1 amendment,
A1.
Please.
A1, thank you. This is the referendum amendment. To the amendment, Senator Osmick.
I guess the same rule applies. I don't think I need to belabor the point.
All right. To the amendment, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I would appreciate a no vote on this amendment. This is not a tax increase. It is simply an authorization for our county commissioners to govern themselves locally. So there is no no tax increase here that we're voting on. So I appreciate a no vote. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Chairman, sorry I came in late, but the bill's identical?
Senator, similar. Very similar. I think Senator Peterson had a few more provisions. So, so on the A1 amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
No. Motion does not pass. Senator Carlson, do you have a motion?
Are there any questions on 664? I think we've talked it to death. So, Mr. Chair, I would move Senate File 664 be recommended to pass and forwarded
taxes.
To the tax committee.
Right. On the Carlson motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no.
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 Motion passes. All right.
Thank you, members. Thanks.
All right. Why don't we go with Senator Franzen, and are you ready? All right, thank you.
It can be. Let me figure out which one's my bill.
Welcome to the committee, Senator Franzen, on Senate File 875. We're taking you, Senator Franzen, first, because then Senator Peterson has a similar bill, but it's much more expansive. So, and I think your ideas contain somewhat in Senator Peterson's bill, so we'll hear about establishing the office, and then we'll hear more about it from Senator Peterson. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On Senate File 875, the purpose of this proposal is to establish a joint program office that would be responsible for overseeing and coordinating the activities required to develop, evaluate, and implement public-private partnerships. For those of you who don't know what that means, as defined by the Federal Highway Administration, a public-private partnership is a contractual agreement formed between public and private sector partners, which allows more private sector participation than is traditional. The agreement usually involves a government agency contracting with a private company to renovate, construct, operate, maintain, and or manage a facility or system. PPPs, as it's commonly referred to, cover as many as a dozen types of innovative contracting, project delivery, and financing arrangements between public and private sector partners. In PPPs, the private sector performs functions normally undertaken by the government, but the public sector remains ultimately accountable for the facility and the overall service to the public. P3 is also called, or PPPs, investment can promote and enhance economic development. These partnerships can supplement existing funding sources and financing techniques. The Joint Program Office concept, which is the purpose of this bill, would involve representatives from a variety of public organizations with specific expertise in fiscal, legal, regulatory, financial, policy, and other technical skills and experience required to ensure that the public interest is served in any future public-private partnership agreements. Organizations that may be involved in a joint program office include the Department of Employment and Economic Development, the Department of Administration, Minnesota Management and Budget, the Metropolitan Council, and the Public Facilities Authority. These organizations have expressed support for the Joint Program Office concept. Although all of these entities already work on public-private partnerships and economic development issues, a Joint Program Office would allow for better coordination. This office will enhance and build on existing relationships. The Joint Program Office is conceived as a fluid entity that would utilize the skills and talents of a mixed personnel, depending upon the type of public-private partnership project under consideration. This office is envisioned to be staffed with existing personnel, and it is likely that it would require a portion of several people's time, but is unlikely that anyone would work for the office at a full-time basis. There would be no new spending required to staff it. No specific public-private partnership projects have been identified at the present time, but this office could help administer the Transportation Economic Development Program, and the governor has recommended $20 million in general funds for this program for this biennium. With that, I will turn it over to MnDOT Government Affairs Office, Eric Rudin, for further testimony.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Rudin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Franzen has done a good job of presenting the bill, so I'll really just be available if there are any questions.
Great. Thank you. Questions, members? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Either to the author or to our MnDOT person, can you give me even one hypothetical example of how we might use this? Maybe a real example if you have one. But.
Mr. Rudin, fantasy or reality? Take your pick.
Mr. Chair, actually, as the senator indicated, this office can help us to administer the Transportation Economic Development Program. And that is a program that's been around now for, I believe, about 4 or 5 years that has received funding from the legislature. We've had two solicitations for projects through that program. And so we do have staff that have been working on that effort already. The program has been very successful. There have been a number of applications. The number of applications has greatly exceeded the amount of resources that have been available for the program. There have also been other instances. For example, out in, I believe it's the city of Minnetonka, United Health Group helped finance the construction of a new interchange on Highway 169. They were doing a large expansion of their facility, and the existing interchange was not sufficient to handle the amount of traffic that was projected with the new corporate office they had out there. And so they helped us actually to finance that highway project. So there are examples where this has already occurred in Minnesota.
And Senator, Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, there are examples across the country as well. I mean, Denver is using it for some transportation projects to and from the airport, and I know a common one that is commonly referred to is also Chicago in their tolling programs when the state leases tolling facilities in a public-private partnership. So those are some examples that you can learn of best and best practices and examples of how it could be utilized in other scenarios.
Senator Senjum.
Does the bill, well, apparently with United Health we can do this already. Does the bill further enable this to happen, or does it simply, is it a law of encouragement, so to speak?
Senator Franzen.
Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, I believe it gives it more of a signal that this is something that the department, MnDOT, is going to be utilizing and looking and exploring for more options and more projects in the future. So it kind of signals that's something that is encouraged, okay. Not to say that it hasn't happened or it hasn't been looked at in the past.
Thank you.
All right. Senator Osmond.
Mr. Chair, and to perhaps to make more clarify the whole that interchange that you're talking about, actually I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that interchange at Londonderry and Bren Road was actually part of MnDOT's plan, it's that United Health Group wanted it done in a more speedy fashion. That, therefore, they decided to become more involved in the situation as opposed to letting MnDOT get around to it whenever they particularly cared to, which wasn't in their best interest in that particular case. So correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's a correct further or further understanding of that situation.
Mr. Chair, Senator Osmark, yes, that's great.
Thanks.
Fair statement.
Thank you. All right. Anything further, members? Senator Carlson.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Dean, how do you foresee making sure that this is not just a priority shifter? Of course, we'd like to do what they did out at United Health, but then again, there may be some cases where this is just a priority shifter and it sucks up a lot of other available money just because there's some small match and some extra pressure to do a project like that. How do you see balancing something like that?
Well, that Senator Carlson, we call that queue jumping.
Queue jumping.
Yeah, jumping the queue. And we don't like it. Mr. Rudin.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, you're correct. That's not something we want to engage in. And, you know, that's part of the goal, I think, of this office is that they would help. One of the directives to this office would be to help protect the public interest. And so I think it would be on this office to try to make sure that that doesn't happen. We don't want their entities to be able to basically buy their way to the front of the queue. That's not what the intent here is. The intent is to bring additional resources to the table. We all know that there's not enough transportation funding to go around, and so if there's a way to sort of leverage some private sector investment, we think that's a positive thing.
Senator Carlson.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Rudin, it looks like what you're doing here is you're identifying up to 3 pilot projects, I believe that is. That's I don't see the number in the bill language here, but
Senator Carlson, I think that's the Peterson bill.
Well, that's the Peterson bill.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I must have the
875
is the one.
When are we talking? Senator Carlson, yeah, we have 875 in front of us.
Yeah, but at any rate, we're going to get some kind of feedback on the success of this, I would assume. The legislature or the Transportation Committee is going to get feedback on it.
Senator Franz and Mr. Rudin, feedback.
Chair and Senator Carlson, we'd certainly happy to provide any feedback that you would like, whether on a one-on-one basis or coming to the committee. There's no specific reporting requirement associated with this bill, but for example, there is authorization in law already to do a TIFIA, which is a federal financing program. We have authorization to do a TIFIA project, and then after the conclusion of that project, we're required to report back to the legislature. And certainly on the Transportation Economic Development Program, we're very public about the projects that applied for funding and the projects that received funding, and our website has all sorts of information about the number of jobs that are anticipated and the projects. So certainly we'd be happy to provide that information.
All right. Any other questions, members? Senator Franzen, anyone else to testify on your bill? On your
no, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Would anyone else like to testify on Senate File 875? No. Senator Franzen, do you have a motion?
I move for Senate File 875 would be laid over for possible inclusion, I believe, in this case.
Whatever your pleasure is, we can do either or we can do both. We can move it on and include it.
Okay. Well, restated, move for Senate File 875 to be moved to the floor for recommended for passage and moved to the floor.
All right. On the Franzen motion, any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Peterson. Our final bill. couple minutes. Little bill. Welcome, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We have before you Senate file. I do have a delete all amendment, actually, say A3 amendment for Senate file 742.
All right. I am aware of the A3 amendment. All right. Why don't we pass out the A3 amendment?
Members, while those are being distributed, I can begin to talk about the bill summary and some of the reasons why you may want to consider supporting this. And then after that, we have some folks that are going to speak to the bill as well. To present a problem statement similar to what Senator Senjum asked, what this bill does or what this bill does by establishing a public-private partnership pilot program is that you may have realized over the last several years, MnDOT in particular has very large projects that have significant regional impact, generally speaking, that have not been able to accomplished primarily because of their costs. And if Senator Senjum, if I had a chance to answer his question, I'd tell you a story about a high-speed river crossing between I-94 and Highway 10, the two most busiest corridors in the state. A high-speed river crossing where it would allow people to cross the Mississippi River at highway speeds. It's very expensive, somewhere in the neighborhood of $250 million. Folks, this project has actually been started. That's how far up the queue it was, so to speak. There's been a fair amount of money invested in environmental work. There's some right-of-way has actually already been purchased. In fact, the large CapEx power lines that you see going up I-94 west to Fargo have been built to accommodate this project as well, but yet this project has been tabled and shelved and is not able to move forward simply because of the funding sources aren't available. My personal view is that MnDOT does not have the money to do these large projects that have significant cost, but with significant cost comes significant regional advantage. And this bill in the establishment of this program, this pilot program, will allow an avenue for these large projects of very significant impact on our communities to move forward. Section 1 simply just allows I need to move the A3 amendment.
All right, Mr. Chair. A3. And members, this is the first hearing on this bill in its Committee of Original Jurisdiction, so it's an author's amendment. All in favor of the A3, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 1 of this bill just provides and gives permission for MnDOT to establish and create a public-private partnership pilot program. The Section 2 is basically identifies program restrictions in terms of how we're going to select projects as well. Section 3 basically provides for the evaluation and the selection of the private entity and the project both. Section 4 really allows some provisions, but it offers the advisory and oversight conditions of this office, that office must review the contracts before execution, as well as ensuring that the contracts serve the public interest. Section 5 authorizes the commissioner or the Met Council the ability to accept federal funds and to enter into agreements to carry out the pilot program. Our effort, our intention is to maximize funding from other sources as well. And then to Senator Carlson's question in regard to the feedback, this bill also requires that August 1st, on an annual basis, moving forward after August 1st of 2015, MnDOT and the Met Council, if they have projects, would be required to submit a list of the public-private partnership agreements to the committee chair and the minority lead for the Transportation Committee as well. And then Section 7 just relates specifically to the effective dates if this were a bill to be passed and signed by the governor. Moving forward, I think that gives you an overview of what this project does, what this bill will do. In a nutshell, what this bill will do, it will allow private investment private equity money to come into Minnesota, build these projects for the benefit of our taxpayers and our residents, and earn a return, and then have that project essentially turned back over to the taxpayers at some point in terms of in an effort to try and address our transportation needs in the state of Minnesota. With that, we have some folks that would like to speak to this bill.
Thank you, Senator Peterson. And on the speaking roster, I have Margaret Donahoe first, and then Scott Merrick and Carl Kuhl, and John Houseladen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. And I am here today to support Senate File 742. As you all know, with the huge unmet needs on our transportation system, including a gap of $5 billion over the next 20 years just to maintain the current highway system that we have in the state, we think it is critical that the state have all the options and tools available to address these needs. So in addition to increasing funding for transportation, we think it is also important to look at different financing options, which is what this legislation provides. We would like to thank Senator Peterson very much for his leadership in introducing this bill, because there are important projects, like the ones that he mentioned, that do not have funding and are not included in the next 20-year highway plan. So unless there's some additional revenue or some additional options for providing for these projects, they simply will not be built. The advantages to the state of authorizing these P3 projects include saving public funds by using private capital, saving time by expediting project delivery, allocating certain risks to the private sector, and taking advantage of the innovation and expertise provided by the private sector. P3 options also create a strong financial incentive on private contractors, because their financial return is hinged on construction quality, managerial performance, and the revenue outlook of the facility involved. Minnesota does have experience with design build projects that have used best value as opposed to low bid. And you can see the results of some of those major projects, like the Rock 52 project near Rochester, expanding 494, the new Highway 212 project, and also major transit projects that have used design build. And this has significantly increased the time that it takes to get these projects completed. I'd really like to stress that P3s are not just another name for tolls. There are a variety of financial arrangements that can be made for both highway and transit projects, and these include construction payments, which are lump sum payments that can be made at the end of a project or for certain project milestones, availability payments, which have to do with the performance of the system. So private entities are compensated based on how the project is performing. Also, shadow tolls, which have to do with the use of the facility by the public. So various payments are made based on the use. Passenger fees and fares are also included in public-private partnerships as compensation. You've heard about some private contributions, outright contributions of land or money, like with the Bren Road project, that are not expected to be paid back. And joint development agreements have been used around the country, as you heard. In one instance, in Portland, a company provided $28 million up front in exchange for the right to develop a 120-acre parcel next to an airport for mixed-use development. So there are private entities with capital looking for ways to invest that money, sometimes in exchange for those kinds of development rights or other financial situations that can be negotiated. But we believe that this is an important tool. Of course, protecting the public interest is important, so we do support the creation of the office that you heard about. That we think that that will provide the protection necessary. And so we believe that this legislation is very limited, it's thoughtful, it will move the state forward from studying public-private partnerships to actually looking for projects that we can get done. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Donahoe. Any questions for Ms. Donahoe? Thank you. Mr. Merrick.
Yeah.
Senator Senjum.
Maybe more from MnDOT, and it doesn't have to be answered now, but I'll just throw it out for Ms. Donahue. If there were, I'll make it reasonable, $25 million worth of private sector money available for Highway 14, you think we could move that up the queue? I mean, are we talking that kind of a system? And don't concentrate on the dollars, but you know, something significant.
Ms. Donahoe.
Mr. Chair and Senator, I don't know how the department would deal with some of these proposals in terms of the rearranging the current STIP. But I believe that the legislation would allow for unsolicited proposals so that some projects that currently are not in the STIP could be considered. And the idea is that this would be an additional $25 million or whatever the number is that currently isn't available. So you're expanding the overall pie, so to speak, of transportation funding and would potentially allow some projects to be done that's otherwise, we're not sure how they would be done. But I think, again, that's an issue for this office or for the department to decide, you know, based on the amount of additional funding, whether or not certain changes would be made.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Senjum.
I mean, isn't that really the reason for this being a good idea, that we entice outside money into the transportation system? And the expectation, obviously, is that I think that we're going to, you know, we're going to get the project earlier or get it our, you know, maybe our way, so to speak, in terms of where there might be issues and certain decisions that need to be made. But aren't we sort of buying the, or I don't know, maybe I just stop there.
Well,
just seems to me and this is not a bad idea, that we're bringing the private and the public sector together to try to get things done. That's a good idea. But it seems like the private sector is going to have some expectations if they're going to put something in, and it seems to me that might be a more expedited project or something more favorable towards them, which isn't bad either.
So, Senator Senjum, I'll take a crack at that because I need to say that Senator Peterson was very generous in letting me work with him on and including some language and some of that, a lot of that is reflected in the A3 amendment. So the short answer to your question is yes. It allows us to get to some projects that, thank you, that you know, are kind of out there as a dream, while at the same time maintaining our fidelity to the existing STIP, so we're not queue jumping and displacing other things. So that's the one of the big ideas with PPPs. So consistent with what, but the other benefits of PPPs are around gaining more value in other ways. You know, part of it is distributing risk to the private sector, for example. So materials cost or time delivery risk might be picked up by the private sector, or we might gain some innovation in delivery method or some innovation in technology for the actual facility itself. So it's also there's some associated benefits to PPPs that sometimes aren't available through traditional procurement, through traditional, you know, design, bid, build methods. So absolutely what you're saying, and then there's a bunch more to it that makes it a good idea. So that's my speech in favor of the bill. All right, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Chair Dibble and members. My name is Scott Merrick, Executive Director of St. Cloud Area Planning Organization. I would like to thank Senator Peterson for taking the lead on this legislation, and also thank Senator Dibble for supporting this work through his co-authoring. On behalf of the St. Cloud Area Planning Organization and its 11 units of local government in the St. Cloud area, I would like to speak in favor of Senate File 742. I encourage your support of this legislation as a way of leveraging private sector investment and expanding Minnesota's transportation financing toolbox, which could assist Minnesota in expanding corridors like I-94 and the I-94-10 crossing that Senator Peterson spoke to in his opening comments, and many other mobility projects so desperately needed in greater Minnesota and the Twin Cities metro area. As you may be aware, the Transportation Finance Advisory Committee, or TFAC, recently concluded that Minnesota faces a $50 to $55 billion funding gap over the next 20 years to realize an economically competitive world-class transportation system. In order to expand our transportation system to be truly world-class, we must also expand our way of thinking about how we finance transportation projects. With historically low interest rates and ever-increasing construction inflation, there is no better time than the present for Minnesota to expand its transportation financing toolbox to include private sector financing options. Ever-increasing construction costs due to inflation, in addition to increasing demands, have resulted in deferring basic maintenance, with increasing safety concerns, mounting congestion, and missed economic growth opportunities for businesses and the commuting public. With Minnesota expected to add almost one million more residents over the next two decades, these transportation problems are going to get worse with time. In order to realize the TFAC's recommended world-class transportation system, we cannot limit our transportation future to ideas of the past. We must think differently, as other urban centers around the entire United States and the world are currently doing. And I'll just leave you with a stat from FHWA. They have found that for every $1 billion invested in highway construction, approximately 28,000 jobs are created. These jobs are tied to expanded transportation infrastructure and would allow Minnesota to be accessible for new economic growth while at the same time getting people safely to and from their destinations in a timely manner. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Merrick. All right, Mr. Kuhl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for your time today. My name is Carl Kuhl. I'm the executive director of the Central Minnesota Transportation Alliance. The board of the Central Minnesota Transportation Alliance would like to echo the sentiments of the others in thanking Mr. Peterson and members of the committee for moving this legislation today. CMTA is the Central Minnesota Transportation Alliance, for short, CMTA, is a public-private partnership of local governments, private sector organizations, and public sector organizations that advocate for high-quality, efficient surface and air transportation systems that will accommodate the growing demands of the fast-growing St. Cloud metropolitan region. CMTA supports Senate File 742 and the transportation funding that it will provide. Senate File 742 and its innovative funding methods represent a positive move towards further development of transportation infrastructure in central Minnesota. The region has seen a steady increase in freight, commuter, and vacationer travel with a lack of equal increase in transportation infrastructure. This has resulted in a transportation system unable to accommodate the needs of the region. One central Minnesota company, Speedy Delivery, has an average of 105 drivers on the I-94 corridor on any given day. Regular backups on 94 along the corridor, especially near Highway 242 and Highway 24 interchanges, are not only inefficient but dangerous as well. Unfortunately, a 20-minute delay through the westbound corridor in the afternoon is the norm, not the exception. This delay results in a $205,000 annual expense for Speedy Delivery. The Central Minnesota Transportation Alliance appreciates the efforts of this committee to use innovative financing ideas to expand and fund transportation projects in central Minnesota and throughout the state. Senate File 742 is a necessary infusion of funding for transportation projects that central Minnesota desperately needs. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Kuhl. Any questions, members? Mr. House-Laden. I'm sorry, Senator Osmick.
I can wait.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I do have two handouts for the committee. If I could have them distributed, please. Dangerous place to be between the committee and the exit door. I think I'm the last testifier tonight, Mr. Chair. Is that right?
Indeed.
I will speed it. No.
I've already had my dinner, so
all right.
I'm settled in here.
All right. Well, thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Hausladen, president of the Minnesota Trucking Association, and I'm here today to testify in opposition to Senate File 742. Now, like most road users, our members support increased spending on Minnesota's road and bridge infrastructure. And while some feel the answer to infrastructure funding lies in alternative mechanisms, we believe that the current system of fuel taxes, registration fees, and motor vehicle sales taxes is the fairest and most efficient. Now, while public-private partnerships, or P3s, have a lot of conceptual appeal, and I will grant that they do, especially for states looking for increased transportation funding, in practice, P3s rarely work out well. You have a handout citing three such P3 failures: the South Bay Expressway, the Dulles Greenway, and State Highway 130 in Texas. I'm not going to go into those details, but I think Senator Senjum asked for examples of what's working. I guess my job today is to make you aware of what some of the challenges are so that we can go into this with our eyes wide open. The other piece that we're distributing is just the first four pages of an Office of Inspector General report dated July 28th of 2011. And I have two complete copies here for anyone who may want them. And its title is Financial Analysis of Transportation-Related Public-Private Partnerships. So this is the Inspector General of the United States looking at all of these options and ideas from across the country. And here's what they said. We found that PPPs are not likely to significantly decrease the infrastructure funding gap because private sector investment in transportation through PPPs generally does not entail new or incremental funds. Rather, the funds paid up front to the public sector under a PPP are paid in exchange for future revenues, often in the form of tolls. In other words, a PPP primarily changes the timing with which funds become available, but not the amount of the funds. A PPP only provides additional funds to the extent that the private sector is willing to pay more for a project, a roadway, for example, than the public sector expects to earn from the public or from the project over time. We also need to be clear that no matter how Senate File 742 is fundamentally how it is painted, and yes, there are some variations on a theme, it is fundamentally a tolling bill because you have to recoup cost. That's the only way that private firms can recoup their initial investment, plus a profit margin, is to toll. There has to be a mechanism. This runs counter to both the current policy of the state as well as public opinion towards tolling. So, based on the limited P3 instances we have in the U.S., and there are not a lot of them, we know these things. First, they don't really bring in new money to a state, but are effectively a loan against future revenue. To ensure private sector interest, privatized roads require exclusive access and significant traffic volumes. A lot of Minnesota rural roads are just not going to fit that description. And how could our trucking industry be guaranteed that an existing bridge would not be posted to a lower weight limit, effectively forcing trucks to use the tolled route in an effort to generate revenue? And there is rarely any public input regarding rate setting, and most P3 leases have been negotiated behind closed doors. And P3s are costly to administer. Public toll facilities eat up 25% to 30% of toll revenue for administration. Private toll roads will add a profit margin on top of this. Compare that to our state fuel tax administrative costs of just 2% to 3%. And we have yet to see what kind of condition these tollways are left in at the end of their leases. Do potholes really matter to parties looking for a return on investment? Current P3 projects nationally are performing poorly. I give you three examples, and will likely suffer from lower maintenance. So for all these reasons, we urge you to vote no on Senate File 742, or at a minimum, if there are really other ways to do this separate from tolling, strike all references to tolling in the bill and let the other concepts go forward. So I thank you for your time, and I stand ready to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hausladen. Any questions for Mr. Hausladen? Senator Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Mr. Hausladen. Actually, the one example is rather interesting, the Dulles Greenway. They built that, because I use it quite often when I'm out visiting my client, but Did you know that they also built the majority of the traffic that goes out there on that area is all diverted through secondary lanes that go back and forth between the airport? The majority of the traffic to the airport doesn't actually have to take the toll road because they can avoid the tolls because of the expressway that they put in. They're actually, by putting the expressway in, they actually stop people from using the tolls, therefore defeating the purpose of having the toll roads there in the first place. Have you been through that airport? I guess it's more of a statement than a question.
Mr. Chair, Senator, it's been a while since I've been through Dulles, since I usually fly through Reagan there, but I am familiar with the road.
Yep.
All right. Senator Carlson.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Peterson and also Mr. Hausladen, there is a provision in here that says that the Commissioner of Met Council can't enter into any non-compete agreement that inhibits the state's ability to address ongoing or future infrastructure needs. Do you read that as preventing that sort of let's say fair use, for instance, like you mentioned, signage to force trucks to go over the toll area and not use the alternative, the free alternative? I guess you know this has been, and I appreciate your points there, because this has been something that I've thought for some time, is that when you have a partnership like this that has to make money, that you're almost agreeing to make sure that particular installation makes money. And that might even be something like our MinPass lanes, where we would not make the highway have enough capacity because we need to be sure to fill the MinPass lanes to be able to get a return on investment. So this is the kind of thing that I think we have to be very careful about, that we don't build in some restriction that forces the traffic to go through the toll direction or some other mechanism that pays back the owner of this specially special installation. So I'm not sure how we can do that, but I fear that does happen and that it could happen and will happen.
Mr. Hausland.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Well, I do want to thank the author and the chair for, adding things in the bill to attempt to address some of these issues. I think the non-compete is a good example. But as we've looked at it and as I've talked to my peers around the country, these are very complex agreements. The firms that collect the money to bring it in and put it together, they have teams of smart analysts and lawyers. And, I mean, they're looking for every angle to maximize their return. And what I can say is we've seen DOTs in other states, it's just hard to have the capacity and the staff. And to a certain degree, no offense to MnDOT, the sophistication to go against some of these multinational entities, because that's where a lot of this money is coming in to fund them.
So, Mr. Hausladen, you and I agree on more than we disagree on in your testimony. And to your point, Senator Peterson and I, together, I think, did address a number of the criticisms. I actually agree with the findings of the Office of the Inspector General and some of these examples that you cite in your handout, that there are PPPs around the country that have been spectacular failures, for a variety of reasons. And in fact, I can bore the committee yet again with the fact that I was on this committee, NCSL, for couple of years that looked at and talked about these things, and the reason I went on was because I was familiar with particularly the Chicago Skyway, as well as the other example, the Indiana toll roads, as well as SR-91 in California and a number of the Texas failures, because I think their legislation in those states, they either had none or they had something that was really, really thin and didn't have the kind of clear, bright lines and the public interest language that's fairly extensive that Senator Peterson is offering, including, I agree, these entities come into states and they're able to kind of outmaneuver and outnegotiate the public agency. So that's why we've established Senator Franzen's office, and that idea is picked up as well. It's not identical, but it's similar. We'll figure out how to merge the language. The Joint Program Office and Senator Peterson's bill is also, as well as the requirement that the commissioner and or the Met Council contract with consultants who have who can match wit for wit level of knowledge and experience in negotiating these sorts of deals.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Peterson.
And I guess I'm ready to conclude unless there's any other questions.
Any more questions? All right. Anyone else? Would anyone else like to testify on Senate File 742?
Mr. Chair and members, my office has worked on this 3 years. I was first elected in 2010, and this is one of the first issues that we chose to pick up and try and move forward, quite frankly, because it's a priority for the communities I serve. And if any of you have these large regional projects in your district that are very expensive and have very significant regional impact, your constituents, this is a priority for them because, members, I believe these projects will not get done without something like this. In response a little bit to the testimony, and please recognize that this is a pilot project. This bill right here you have in front of you, 742, allows for three projects. There is an opportunity to click off and to stop this if the legislature feels like they need to. So that's a significant reason why I think you can support this bill as well. Along with the issues Chairman Dibble mentioned, there is many references to the public interest. We address the non-compete as well as the fee issue as well. Members, this is absolutely a solution for these large regional projects that have been taken off lists that many of us have been disappointed to see in recent years. And I would move Senate File 742 as amended to general orders and would be grateful for your support.
All right. Anything further, members?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Osmick.
Roll call vote, please.
All right. A roll call has been requested. A roll call will be granted. All right. Chair votes yes.
Senator Carlson.
Yes.
Senator Champion.
Yes.
Senator Franzen.
Yes.
Senator Jensen.
No.
Senator Kent.
Yes.
Senator Kiffmeyer. Senator Miller.
No.
Senator Osmick.
No.
Senator Peterson.
Yes.
Senator Pratt.
No.
Senator Reinert. Senator Rest. Senator Senjum.
No.
Senator Tomasoni.
No.
Senator Westrum. Senator Wieger.
On a vote of 6-6, the motion does not prevail. All right. All right. Well, so be it. All right. We are adjourned, members.